Success is always temporary. When all is said and done, the only thing you'll have left is your character. This is Thought for Today with Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing here in Capel, California. Success is always temporary. When all is said and done, the only thing you'll have left is your character. And that's so true. We climb the ladder to success. We don't care who we step on, who we climb over. And we don't care the money we make as CEOs and things like that, you know, tremendous millions of dollars. One fellow gets, you know, like maybe $20 million or even a billion. And we plebeian people that we are, we think that they shouldn't get that money. However, if you have a real estate agent, you pay him 6, 7, or 10% commission on the sale of the property. So if a real estate agent is selling a piece of property that's worth, let's say, $3 million, 7% is quite a comfortable little figure. Mm-hmm. Now, that's just the way the procedure works. Now, they have worked it out in some of the real estate groups, board of realtors type of thing, where after you have so many hundreds of thousands of dollars, that is, you know, price of the property, up into the millions, then it becomes a prorated thing. But in truth, why? Why? What makes 7% of $100,000 more important than 10% of a million? What makes it any different? It doesn't make it any difference. It's just that some people feel that it's an excessive amount to charge. Okay, now let's look at our CEOs. Our CEOs are told that if they will take this company that is going into the drain, you know, its assets are going down, its sales have gone down, its public relations has gone down, its stock value has gone down, and all of those things. And they say to the CEO, all right, now, we will give you, $2 or $3 million a bonus if you can bring it out of the doldrum, or we will give you the same equivalent in stock in the company. Now, if you believe in the company and you get that amount of money in stock and you bring the company out of the pits, that stock is not going to be worth the $10 a share that you're giving it as. It's going to jump into $20 a share, $50 a share, and $100 a share. You follow me? Mm-hmm. So if a guy is given stock options, or stock period, not options, period, and the stock starts leaping from $10 a share to $20, $20 a share compared to $10 a share is how much?
100%.
And that's 100% commission on doing it. Now, if the stock goes up to $50 a share from $10 a share, that's 500%. Fantastic. A 500% bonus. Well, now, they don't think anything about that. Because when the stock is low, they think, well, you know, that's, it's not that much good. But if that executive has any brains at all, he's going to look at what is offered to him. And he's going to say, if I can make this company turn around and blossom, I am going to be pushing it toward Bill Gates. I'm going to be doing wonderful. Now, what's he going to do with that money? Now, it doesn't matter. But what's he going to do with that money? What's he going to do with all that stock? What are all these very, very, very wealthy people all over the world doing with their wealth? Well, they're giving some to charity because it's a tax exemption. They're planning it for their children, perhaps. Now, the children won't know what to do with it unless the parents teach them how to use it and let it teach them how to make it grow, and et cetera, et cetera. But you and I must stop thinking, what are they going to do with their money? It's none of our cotton-picking business. What is our business is, what is the character of the woman or the man who has received this generous bonus? Not really generous, because if they couldn't pull it around, their stock wouldn't be worth anything. But they have motivation to pull it around and use all of their gray matter to make it happen. Now, what happens to these people as they get great wealth? Do they become more magnanimous, more sharing, more generous, more philanthropic? Do they become more caring as a person to the people in their employ? Do they become more sensitive to the world and its not needs necessarily, but to the direction that they could guide it to go? Now, let's just take another point here. We looked at money, and money is good. And let's look at Leo Iacocca, for instance, or any of these other big wheels, you know, these big CEOs who have struck it rich, who've done very well, exceedingly well. Okay, now, let's take one of those guys, and you don't know who that's going to be because you don't know what they're going to do on each project. What kind of motivation will they have to make a success out of each project? Okay, so here we have a project, and it's called World Peace. Mm-hmm. We have a project called World Peace, and the result of that project would be world peace, would be around the world, peace. Every nation in the world would be at peace with themselves first, and then with the rest of the world. Oh, my goodness, but there's no money in it. There's no money in it because you can't be paid for that, because who's going to pay you? The people who are not in peace, or the people who are in peace, or whatever, who's going to pay you? Okay, now, here's where character comes in. Do you think, now you see, the president hires a group of advisors from the top leaders of industry and business in the world, in the United States it is, and pays them $1 a year. He can't pay them what they're worth, because in their industry they were being paid $1 million or $2 million a year or better, you know. And so, but the prestige of being the advisor to the president is quite something. Quite something. It makes their inner self feel very, very good. Okay, if one of them who had moxie and who had ideas and dreams could take on the project of peace on earth, what would he do? Now, let's just say there's four of them, and the four don't know each other. They don't know each other's project, but they each have the project. Quite likely we'd have four approaches to peace on earth. Let's just get rid of a couple approaches right away. One approach is where they pray, and they say, there now is peace on earth, and it began with me, which is fine. And to what extent are they promoting that concept? To what extent are they getting that concept into all of the outreaches of the world? And are they doing it mentally? Or are they doing it physically? Or how are they doing it? Now, that's just a little story. Okay, and another way. When everyone has everything they want, they don't go to war. So, you go around to all the nations in the world, and you find out, what do they want? What do you want? I want my neighbor's property. Okay, you got your neighbor's property. Mm-hmm. Now, what do you want? Well, I want my neighbor's property, the other one. And on and on. Okay, you got it all. Now, what are you going to do with it? Are you going to give them a government as good as they had before you took it over? Are you going to be an inspiration to that country to be its finest and its best that it can be? Or are you just going to plunder their assets and take them home and leave the country in poverty? You know, what are you going to do? What would the United States do if it took over Mexico, for instance, if Mexico wanted to be taken over? Well, the United States would not act like Germany acted. When Germany took over East Germany, they felt that East Germany had to quickly get into the same position West Germany was in, which is a very foolish thing to do, because it should be an acclimation process. It should be a slow movement process. Oh, health and welfare, those things are certainly something you would do, but not development of roads and things like that. That's rather slow. If the United States were to annex Mexico, or Mexico were to annex itself to the United States, what would be one of the first things that the United States would do relative to Mexico? It would go in with one of the greatest health programs in the world, making sure that every Mexican citizen, who is now the United States citizen, has a health checkup. And if they have contagious diseases, they're immediately taken under control. If they have any problems that could be disastrous if they're spread around, they're taken care of. Fire, police, and government would all be very important things. But then the United States would let Mexico come of age by, you see, we have states that are not advanced. We have many of our southern states that have all the rights that every other state has, but they're not using them. They're not using them. They fight for their individualness, you know, like Georgia and a few of the others. They did not want to cooperate with the federal government when they said, blacks would go to school and so forth. And so they fought that. And in the fight, they just gave themselves a black eye because they're part of the United States of America. And they're right in the middle. They can't very well secede from the United States. They could if they wished, but it would be impractical because the amount of federal funds that they receive every year, every day, to operate their various governments and to operate their road programs and their health programs would cease because they no longer be part of the United States. So if Mexico were to be annexed or annex itself to the United States, the change in Mexico would be like in many of our southern states and many of our northern states. We have many northern states that are not developed because there's nothing to develop, you know. They are not areas that would encourage development. You drive through Arizona, New Mexico, big sand dunes and so forth, and there's many areas that just are not conducive to development. Mexico is the same way. It has many high areas for development. Now, if we were successful in going to Mexico, if whoever would be in charge of the project, the first things would be the first things, health and welfare. And after that, then other things would come into play. Now, if we want peace on Earth, what are some of the first things that are important? Health and welfare. It is the health of the world and the welfare of the world. And the first thing that would cease, which does take place in many nations, unfortunately, is genocide, where they kill off their own people because they have too many and things like that. And they have a certain governmental approach where people are just slaughtered, you know. When Hitler slaughtered the Jews, that was not an unusual thing at all. It was quite common because throughout the world this is done. It's just that Hitler did it in a very quick and a very not nice way, you know. The others, they just slaughtered them and dumped them in the grave, and that was done, and they didn't make a big fuss about it. But you see, that's one thing that would have to cease throughout the world. Human rights would become a priority. The rights of the human being, the rights of a person to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, as we have it here in the United States, would become a universal principle. So, you see, are people motivated as much by public welfare type of projects, such as seeing that there's peace on earth and seeing that there's health and so forth, as they are they as motivated on that as they are on money, on industry and business? Now, I guarantee you, every CEO who has made a successful company theoretically has not the basic idea of what that company produces, and it makes no difference at all. He merely knows, or she knows, that these are the ways to grow. These are the ways to succeed in business without even trying, so to speak. These are the way to succeed in business. You succeed in business by getting people's support, by getting people's interest, by getting people's belief in you. And then it grows. It doesn't matter whether you're selling potatoes or a correspondence school or whatever you're selling. It doesn't matter. The only thing that matters is that you believe in the principle of a successful, healthy, dynamic organization that is just really fantastic. Now, you can do that. Anyone can do that. But you see, the big organizations, it's the big companies that can afford the big minds, the minds of people who can be outlandish, you know, who can just say, okay, let's go. Now, you've given me control. I don't want to know what we produce. I don't want to know what our company is. All I want to know is, how much do you want it to grow? How much would you like to see this grow? Would you like to see our assets double? Okay, that means so much to me. 8%, 10% to me. Ooh, ooh, ooh. Would you like to see our company go from a $100,000 a year company, $1 million a year company, to $1 billion a year company? Ooh, my goodness sakes, it's beyond my imagination. But when they are given the rein, and the board of directors gives them the rein to do that, then they do it in their own way. As I told you about Leo Iacocca, when he was chairman of the Chrysler Corporation, he's the only man who ever went to the federal government and asked for a loan beyond imagination to keep his company afloat, because his company was a world power, because his company was a symbol of success. Oh, he gave them a story. I tell you, what a master. And they gave him the loan. But, part two, Mr. Iacocca was a man of so much integrity that he paid the loan off first. He paid it off, but he not only paid off the loan, which most people don't do, he paid it off early, because he took that money. When the government had confidence in him, everybody started having confidence in him, and the company just grew like leaps and bounds, and he just did magic. But he did magic because he believed in himself, and he believed in himself. He had character, and his name will go down in history as famous as any George Washington ever was. There are many of our people. He happens to be a man who isn't tainted by any experiences that were contrary to his highest best that we know of, and let's keep it that way. It doesn't matter. He's a man of great character. He's a man who has left an impression on the world, and is still leaving it on the world. He's the guy who created those little go-karts that you like. You know, the ones that for in campus here, you know, like the golf carts, but they're little go-karts that you sit inside them. $7,000, electric or gas or both. Fantastic. You know? And he, why did he do this? He had money. He did it for fun. He did it because it was a charming idea. And he put his pizzazz behind it, and they're quite common. Quite common. Now, success is always temporary. Chrysler went up, Chrysler went down, Chrysler did this. He was at Chrysler, it was a success. He left Chrysler, and they struggled, and they're up and they're down. And Chrysler and Daimler-Benz have joined forces, and they're producing things together, and they want to bring Porsche and a few of those European Fiat into their fold. And Fiat doesn't... Oh, yes.
Fiat fights.
Huh?
Fiat fights, though. Fiat fights.
Fiat fights. Yeah. No, they don't want to... No. Fiat wants to sell everything except Fiat. They want to keep their little car because this is a family deal, and quite likely they will. But they have sold off and sold off and sold off, and they're just having a ball. But you see, this is what's called takeover. And too often in a takeover, it's a washout. They wash out these companies that have been giving them pain in the neck, you know. The companies that have been eating up part of their profits and not being beneficial to them, and then they take all of that and put it into the companies that they want to be beneficial. But again, that's part of character, and we are not in favor of the little man, and we're not in favor of the big man. We're in favor of everyone who wants to be themselves and have fun. There are no little men, and there are no big men. There are no people who are better or worse than others. There are no people who have a greater genius than others. But all people have the free gift. We haven't got the slightest idea what I'm going to say. All people have the free gift of character. They can't buy it. They can't sell it. They can't make it happen. It just is who they are. And if people have character, they live the happiest life that you can imagine, because they're living in harmony with being themselves and having fun. Character is being yourself. Character is having fun. And if you can understand that, if you can apply that in your life, man, it's wonderful. Now, why don't we just open our borders to the Mexican nation and not inhibit the Mexicans from coming up here? Just let them have free access, almost like we do with Canada. And just get rid of the American border guards, you know, and get rid of the Canadian border guards. And watch what would happen. What would happen would be that the American pizzazz or economy or whatever you want to call it would overflow into Mexico itself. And it would do this up into Canada, too. And we're not keeping anybody out. Anybody who wants to get in from Canada or Mexico, they can get in easily. They come in all the time, and here there's helicopters and Border Patrol are running around, and the people just walk right in. Just walk right in. And we're not even looking for them. In fact, we don't see half of them. We only see their footprints. And that's just the way we like it. But the thing is, character is all anyone has left. When they put your gravestone on your ashes, they will say something like this: here was one of the most noble beings on the face of the earth who believed in themselves and who believed in the world in which they lived. Now, wouldn't that be a compliment? My. I know my brother-in-law I wasn't thrilled with what they put on his stone. Something to the effect, here, a good father, a good husband, and a good brother. Something like that. And I thought, gee, wonderful. If I were to do the tombstone, I would say, a man who cared about his world. No. A man who gave his best. You know.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have to do much more. And for my sister, I would say, a genius who expressed herself as fully, I don't want to say as possible, you know, but who expressed herself wonderfully. You know, a genius artist, because that's what she always wanted to be, you know, if she was playing. A great artist and, I could say, a noble human being, or a divine human being, or something, you know, but you don't want to go too much in one direction or the other, because everybody, you know, people do come along and say, well, I knew her, and she wasn't really that good, you know. But as a statement is, it's a sprick word, we do not speak ill of the dead. We do not speak ill of the dead. And so I got to take it back, what I said about George Washington. George Washington will always be the greatest. But that's true. He will. And each person in our life that passes our way and dies along the way, they're great. Like our friend Clivia Lowe, you know, she, if you had known her in her heyday, she was dynamic and forceful, and she set me up on television in Hartford, Connecticut, you know, at the university campus there, talking to different groups, and she had conducted a seminar in three different places, you know, and she's just a dynamic being. And many people would come out of that, except I didn't pursue them, you know. And it was a great experience. And she passed her way. And Carol Ellsworth, always wanting to help me, always wanting to do nice things for me. And she doesn't even think totally the way I think. She thinks with her spiritualistic attitude. And what's her name over there? Ginger Johnston, remember? My goodness sakes, I never did anything for that lady except at the Church of Religious Science in El Centro. And we became very good friends. And I always believed in her and trusted her. And not trust, but I mean believed in her and worked with her. And she would bring me her different husbands who had alcoholic problems, and they all seemed to have that. And we'd work on that, and they would die or whatever, you know. But she was just a dynamic lady, just dynamic. And she'd come over and clean up my property when I didn't want it cleaned up. But just a love that, what would you write on her stone? You would say, a woman who loved herself and her world, you know, who set her world on fire with care. And every Mexican who walked across the border would end up in her compound, and she would feed them and take care of them and work them, of course, too. But they finally caught on and went on. But the people that we have known who have passed along and are now expressing on another dimension are fabulous. And it's their character we remember. We don't remember all of their successes and stuff like that, but I'm sure each one, Carol Ellsworth, she had her success. And I mean, she left her church well endowed. And Ginger, she left a great piece of property free and clear there, you know, and what have you. But with Ginger, even though her own family had been involved in drugs, she was violently opposed to it. Not violently, she was just opposed to it. She says, that is not right. And so forth and so on. But you see, it's our character. What is our character? What is your character? Is your character something that you would be happy to have your mom and dad know about? Or is your character something that you would just as soon you kept it for yourself? Well, success is temporary, but character lives on forever. I love you, and have a wonderful day, and be a great character.